And welcome to Midday, everyone. Dan Roderick's here with you Monday through Friday on WYPR, WYPF, WYPO, and streaming live across America and Maryland and the deep blue sea through WYPR.org. Thanks for making Midday part of your day.
Just to be clear, because that's the other piece of these lovely mailers that you've all gotten to receive so far, that I'm giving $1.6 billion. Well, the lieutenant governor has a very uncomfortable relationship with the truth. And the fact is that $1.6 billion was made up out of whole cloth.
That's the voice of Attorney General Doug Gansler of Maryland during last night's televised Democratic gubernatorial debate, broadcast live on Maryland Public Television and WBAL-TV. It was the third such debate, the second with all three candidates there. Despite being a no-show for last week's televised debate on WBFF-TV, Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown was there last night to account for his role in the handling of the Maryland Health Insurance Exchange. Here he is defending his job.
How much in charge were
you? Let me describe my role. Implementing the Affordable Care Act, the big component, of course, was the health benefits exchange. But there's also the Medicaid expansion. There are issues that deal with the workforce and making sure that we have a health provider workforce to do the work. Also, there are questions that we looked at in a work group we put together dealing with the safety net. So as more and more Marylanders get health insurance, there's still going to be some that don't. So I was the chair of the Health Reform Coordinating Council that looked at every one of these aspects. And one of the first things that we did 3 years ago, we sent to the legislature the blueprint for establishing a health benefits exchange. And we established it as an independent government agency. In retrospect, like in Connecticut, I'd go back and say, appoint me as a member of the health benefits exchange, maybe even the chairman of the exchange, but that's not the role that I served. But that doesn't mean that I didn't have a responsibility. I was chair of the Health Reform Coordinating Council. When we got the information that we did, and I didn't get it till after October 1st because I wasn't on the health reform, the health exchange where the information was had. As soon as we got the information, then we brought the exchange in and said, okay, we've got some things that you need to do.
To make that clear for you, there's Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown last night during the debate giving the most detailed accounting of his role in the oversight of Maryland's health insurance website, the failed website. He said, you didn't hear it exactly there, but he said he didn't learn of its problems until after it had failed on October 1st, which is when most of us heard about it. Attorney General Doug Gansler, Montgomery County Delegate Heather Mazier, were both more combative than they've been during the first two debates. The three are scheduled to appear in a final debate that will air Thursday morning, early Thursday morning, I think it's 8 a.m., on radio station WOLB, The Larry Young Show here in Baltimore. Polls have shown Lieutenant Governor Brown leading his Democratic rivals, but with many likely voters undecided. The primary election is 3 weeks from today. This is Midday Politics on WYPR. Joining me in Studio A, Melissa Deckman, Chair and Professor of Political Science at Washington College, back with us in Studio A. Melissa, nice to see you again.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
And Barry Raskevar is with us. Barry Raskevar, who blogs now at politicalmaryland.com, longtime political commentator here in Maryland. Nice to have you back with us, Barry.
Always a pleasure, Dan.
And here's my pitch to listeners, okay? Undecided voters, did you tune in last night? We gave you plenty of notice about this televised debate. 410-662-8780, did you make up your mind? Did you make up your mind among these three candidates who you're going to vote for in the primary? Or maybe you're deciding to sit out the primary and you're looking to see who the Republican nominee will be. We can talk about that today as well, because the Republican candidates all had a debate yesterday, also at MPT. I think in the afternoon they taped the debate that will air on Friday. First, let's go over a little bit of what we just heard here. I mean, I think the news was that Jeff Salk and the moderator of this debate went after Lieutenant Governor Brown and gave him opportunity to explain exactly what his role was in the rollout, in the work up to and the rollout of Obamacare in Maryland. And how do you think he handled that question? I'll start with you, Melissa.
I think it was bad. I think he continues to struggle on television, and he had a great opportunity, really, to put this issue to rest. And I think, if anything, it just opened up more questions. It was very rambling, and you really did not get a sense of what happened while he was serving as the head, quote-unquote, of this whole reform effort. So I think he did a very bad job.
It sounded to me like bureaucratic gobbledygook, and I don't know how a listener out there might have deciphered exactly what he did and didn't do. But Barry,
unfortunately,
We didn't get an opportunity for follow-up questions here because I cannot believe that October 1st was the first time the lieutenant governor found out that things were off the track. Indeed, there were some meetings with the governor himself about whether or not to go forward with this or delay the start of the exchange a couple of weeks earlier. He knew about a lot of this, that what was going on, it was not his best moment. I think he's just very fortunate that an examination of what went wrong isn't going to take place for a long, long time after the election.
Let's go over exactly what he said. He served on, we describe him as the point man, the administration's point man on Obamacare, which sounds like you're the guy in charge. And actually, he says he had oversight of, what, the legislative coordination of the website, the actual, whether Maryland would even have its own exchange.
Yeah,
right?
Let me deconstruct this a little bit. They created a coordinating council, and Brown was not the chairman. He was the co-chairman with Health Secretary Josh Sharfstein. There is another panel that was supposed to oversee the health exchange, and Sharfstein was the chairman of that group, not Brown. And that's what he was trying to get to in his remarks last night. Now, what Brown was referring to was the so-called blueprint that was sent to the legislature that created the health exchange. That is really where all the problems started, because it was a terrible, terrible bill. What it did was create an independent agency outside of the health department, which is enormously expensive and duplicates all sorts of things that the health department already does, and denied the health exchange people all sorts of expertise and support that they could have gotten from the health department staff. They couldn't draw on that because they were an independent agency. All that was the lieutenant governor's doing, according to the lieutenant governor last night.
Okay, and then he said he was done. It seemed like he said he was done, that his job was finished until October 1st. That's the sense you get from it, right? And with so much riding on the success of this exchange, you have to wonder why he didn't ask whether it was going to be okay, if things were going all right. I mean, does anyone buy this?
I still am trying to answer the question of why Maryland did not, in fact, go with the federal health exchange. Not that there weren't problems. Of course, there were, and we all saw that nationally. But I think it would have given them some sort of political cover if they'd chosen to do this. My hunch is that the O'Malley administration thought this would be a feather in its cap. You know, he's going to be running for president possibly in a couple of years. And so he wants to position Maryland as being on the forefront of some progressive policies. And so this would have been just a way for them to take credit for a popular program. And of course, the downside of that is if something goes wrong. And here's the downside we're seeing now. And fortunately for Anthony Brown, I think he's the one that's going to be the scapegoat for this.
Governor O'Malley spent a fair amount of time on national television talking about Obamacare, defending it, and stating boldly that Maryland was going forth with its own exchange and was going to be a model for the nation.
Right.
So
Maryland,
he got a lot of mileage out of that.
Yeah. Right. Maryland was leading the nation, he was saying. And meanwhile, Anthony Brown was getting all this credit in Maryland and around the country for being the point man on this for the governor, and was named Lieutenant Governor of the Year based on his work on health reform. When the system goes up, it crashes and burns on the first day.
Well, we have to ask our listeners, because a lot of them are Democrats, a lot of them are voters out there. We'd like to hear from you on this. Does any of this matter to you? Does any of this stick to Anthony Brown for you and make you less excited about voting for him? If you had already made up your mind to vote for him, have you changed your mind because of this at all? If you were undecided, does the criticism of the lieutenant governor, did his explanation last night give you any pause? Here's the phone number to call, because we'd like to hear from you. 410-662-8780. Our midday email address, midday@wypr.org. You can send us an email with your comments about that as well. Specifically, undecided voters, have you come in? Did you make up your mind last night based on what you heard from Douglas Gansler, Heather Mazier, and Anthony Brown? Let's talk a little bit about how the others performed last night. The Baltimore Sun editorial today, saying that Doug Gansler turned in a much stronger performance than he had in two previous televised debates. Delegate Heather Mazier, while again offering voters a cohesive summary of her views, drew a clear contrast with her opponents and how she would govern. And Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown finally gave a coherent, if not entirely flattering, answer about his role in putting together the state's failed health insurance exchange website. I might scratch the word coherent there. 410-662-8780. What about Doug Gansler last night?
Well, this was his best performance. He was much more comfortable. He was more fluent, and he was smoother. And I think he was more effective. He still didn't deliver the home runs on a lot of his answers and responses. It still really isn't clear exactly how he differs all that much from what Governor O'Malley has been doing for the last 8 years, except for the tax increase.
Well, he's tried to present himself as an outsider who has not been and won't be beholden to special interests, lobbyists, for instance.
Right. That's the way he concluded last night. He said, elect Anthony Brown and the special interests will again rule Annapolis, elect me, and that won't happen.
I agree with Barry. I think that Gansler gets better and better every time he's on television. He's not letting the policy wonkishness get in front of him like he used to do. I think, you know, his first few performances were all about spilling as many statistics and facts as possible, and he seems to be better at making the message a little more coherent. I thought his strongest point was on the question of, are Marylanders taxed too much? He was the only candidate to unequivocally say, yes, taxes are too high. And I think this is where he's setting himself apart from Mazier and from Anthony Brown. So I think he scored some points in that regard.
And then Brown came back with criticism of Gansler for wanting to cut the corporate tax rate in Maryland. And then Brown also kind of surprised some people, surprised me a little bit, saying that he would not have signed into law the death tax, we call it, the estate tax break that was given this year that was signed by Governor O'Malley. I was a little surprised to hear that.
Yeah, it was probably surprised Governor O'Malley, too, to hear that, because apparently Brown never said a word leading up to the signing of this bill.
Oh, yes. We never heard from the lieutenant governor on that subject that I recall.
No, nothing at all.
Yeah.
So this was more for the campaign audience than anything else. But it did indicate very clearly that Brown, as well as Mazur, are not on the side of businesses in Maryland, that each of them would tax businesses. And then they turn around and say, and we're going to attract more jobs to Maryland. Now, that seems incompatible to me, but I think it's popular with a lot of voters to say we're going to tax millionaires, we're going to tax corporations, and we're going to give the middle class a break.
And then there was wrangling over where the stronger economy is, Virginia or Maryland. That comparison came up quite a bit between Brown and Gansler as well. At one point, Anthony Brown said, some people say Virginia is cleaning our clock. The last 12 months, Maryland created 25,000 jobs. Virginia lost 5,000 jobs. We're doing a fact check on that as I speak. And after this break, I hope to have some information for you to find out whether that's actually a true statement or not. Barry Raskovar of PoliticalMaryland.com and Melissa Deckman joining us again today from Washington College on Midday Politics. We open the phone lines and hear from you. Did you watch last night's debate? Were you undecided? Have you decided who to vote for? 410-662-8780. Again, our Midday email address, midday@wypr.org. And welcome back to Midday Politics, 410-662-8780 to join our conversation with Barry Raskovar and Melissa Deckman. Let's go right to the phone lines and hear from our listeners, and then Barry and Melissa can comment further. James in Baltimore, we'll start with you. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks so much for taking the call.
Sure.
One comment. I think it's unfathomable that Brown can even be in the running for the governor. I'm a member of MedCAI, the Maryland Medical Society, and he came and presented to our conference. He didn't even take questions about his involvement.
He presented as a candidate recently?
Yes, this was 2 months ago at our spring conference. He, along with all the other gubernatorial candidates, he never took questions about any of his involvement. So I think, just as your panelist said, it was right. It was all set up for him to take the praise if this thing worked. But now that it's failed colossally, he's not taking the blame. If anyone would vote for him in his signature piece, is truly unfathomable.
So it was announced at that forum that he would not be taking questions?
No, there was a question and answer session. All the gubernatorial candidates were up at the podium discussing their positions to the MedKind membership. And though the other candidates did take questions from the audience, Brown did not. And I think that's just symptomatic of his utter failure. He recognizes it, but is still trying to hide under the fact that his signature piece of legislation just failed.
Right.
And now how he could then be responsible to be governorship clearly is erroneous. I think the Republicans have it correct. We're taxed too much here. The sense of safety net has really transitioned, unfortunately, to an entitlement system. We need to get away from that. And I think, unfortunately, the state is now suffering the consequences of what the Democratic leadership in this state has led us to.
Oh, you sound like you're opposed to Obamacare.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for your comments, though, nonetheless, about Anthony Brown not answering
your
questions.
This is typical of how the Brown campaign has been running. There's a forum out in Towson for the business community, and Brown made so many demands in order for them to get him to agree to appear that nobody could ask questions of Brown. He didn't even want to be seated on the stage with the other two opponents. The debate last night, it was co-sponsored by WBAL-TV. You noticed that there were no reporters from WBAL asking questions. That was because Brown vetoed that idea.
Really?
So this is typical of the Brown.
Why would he not want that?
Because some of them have been asking some critical questions in their reporting, just as Brown didn't want to be on WBFF for fear that their reporters...
Because it was a Fox station.
It's a Fox station. They might ask some tough questions. And apparently the campaign managers are afraid that Brown may not be able to handle those answers well.
Hmm. You know, he brings up the fact, and it's fair to point out, that Maryland did pretty well with signing up people who didn't have health insurance before through Medicaid.
Yes, but
and some through the exchange, right?
Yes, but a lot of them were what they call rolled over from existing Medicaid programs.
Right.
And the whole idea was to sign up people on the private part of the exchange.
Right, to help pay for the rest of it.
Of the 300 and some thousand, only 60 some thousand were of those.
Okay, so, all right, thank you for pointing that out. But Melissa, you could say to voters, as Anthony Brown does, okay, we had problems, I got in there, I fixed it. And the end result, when we reached the final deadline for the first year of Obamacare, we didn't do that badly. We got a lot of people signed up who didn't have health insurance before.
I think embedded in what he was saying last night was that message. But unfortunately for Brown, he was meandering. He was bringing in all these points of details that were just irrelevant to that more critical point. And so he needs to work on being more condensed in his speaking. He needs to be much more forceful and I think explaining that narrative a little bit more effectively. But watching it last night, it was really, I just thought, a colossal waste for him. He's had months to really hone this message, and he really was unsuccessful in doing it.
Westminster in Carroll County. Terry's the next caller on Midday. Hello.
Hey, Dan, how you doing?
Good, thanks for calling.
Great show, by the way. I think I've been watching some issues up in New Jersey with Governor Christie, and if the GW bridge and the bullying, if none of that sticks to him, I can't see how this will stick to Lieutenant Brown and hurt him too much. But he has missed a tremendous amount of opportunities to get this thing straightened out in the voters' minds. And I think, honestly, just watching him recently address this, and especially last night, I think his cockiness is coming through at the wrong time, and I think he's sending the wrong message to the people.
Thank you very much. From the Sun editorial, Mr. Brown is right to point out that in the end, more than 340,000 people got health care through the exchange, but neither that nor his response to Jeff Salkin's question entirely erases questions about what kind of manager he would be for the state. Would he really be on top of things? And I was talking about lieutenant governors the other day, Barry and Melissa. I was looking at our history of lieutenant governors in Maryland. We haven't had actually that many, because you've only had a lieutenant governor under the Constitution of Maryland since 1970.
Right. You did have, for a brief time in the mid-1800s, you did have a lieutenant governor's office, and then they abolished it for roughly 100 years.
Okay.
And I think, you know, because of the events that transpired after earlier governors in terms of Spiro Agnew and then
Marvin Mandel.
And Marvin Mandel. Mm-hmm. So there was a move to actually put a lieutenant governor back in position because, you know, we needed someone who would be able to step up immediately.
Right, right. Right. And even less than the vice president of the United States, the lieutenant governor in Maryland, to be kind, doesn't do that much. No.
Well,
right?
It's
a ceremonial post.
Very ceremonial.
Maybe they get involved in some lobbying of the legislature during the session. You know, they schmooze.
Right.
What else
right.
do lieutenant?
Well,
my point is that you give him a couple of big assignments, and he blew one of them.
That's
right?
true. That's very true. Under the Constitution, the lieutenant governor has no powers, zero powers. It was established in 1970 by Marvin Mandel, in part because of Agnew becoming vice president, and then the General Assembly had to elect the next governor, and that was not the best way to handle it.
Mandel was Speaker of the House
became
governor. Right,
right. He had more votes in the House than the Senate president did in the Senate, and that's why he became a governor.
Who was the Senate president at the time?
William S. James,
wow, okay.
Billy James. Thanks. From Harford County.
Thank you.
Whose daughter is now running for the state Senate. As a matter of fact, she's in the House of Delegates. But the first lieutenant governor, Blair Lee III, was extremely capable, and Mandel did delegate to him a lot of responsibilities, including putting the state budget together every year, a huge responsibility. But since that time, almost every lieutenant governor has been a figurehead.
I think it's also telling that we have never elected a lieutenant governor to be governor of the state either.
410-662-8780. What does that say about Maryland voters? Does it say anything particular about voters or the quality of the candidates? I don't know what to make of that. 410-662-8780. Anthony Brown could make history by becoming the first lieutenant governor actually elected to a four-year term as governor. Brenda in Eldersburg, please give us a ring. Oh, no, you gave us
Hi.
A ring. Please.
I'm already
yeah,
here.
Come on the air with us. Yeah.
Anyway, I originally was going to vote for Doug Ganser after doing all my research, and I'm very involved, you know, as a volunteer every time there's an election. But really, after researching with Heather Mazier, I have been so I just joined her to volunteer, and my boyfriend, who happens to be a different party, actually changed his party membership because several reasons, but because he's a big environmentalist, and I am also. I think it's wonderful that she was so outspoken about with the Eastern Shore, with the gas line going in, as far as being against it. We've got to consider the environment. We've got to consider. And she voted against the Governor O'Malley, who I know, and I question him a little bit, with the state, the counties taking over the amount for the individual, the teachers and the state workers, the counties taking over the partial cost of that. And I think she actually is not beholden to any particular party, even though she's a Democrat. But she also is she's beholden to the people. And that's what I like about
All right,
her.
Brenda.
Running grassroots.
So
operation.
It sounds like, Brenda, it sounds like you were kind of undecided, unconvinced until the last few days?
Absolutely.
Okay. About Heather Mazier, she did try to distinguish herself from the other two candidates in one respect particularly, and that is in terms of how she's financing her campaign.
On the other question about who's best to change the culture of special interests in Annapolis, I think it's the Mazier Coates campaign that's running as the first publicly financed campaign in 20 years. We're not taking corporate cash. We're not soliciting lobbyists and taking state contractor money. Our campaign is funded by the voters.
I wonder, does that issue resound with voters at all, that particular thing? Can you distinguish yourself that way? Are people impressed by that?
Well, I think she's impressive to a lot of progressive Democrats. You know, Howard Dean, when he ran for president in 2004, used to joke that he was representing the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party when he was running for president. And I think in a lot of ways, Mazier is refreshing to a lot of progressives who believe in things like public funding of campaigns, strong environmental regulations, you know, and also legalizing marijuana, which we'll probably talk about a little bit later as well. So I think in some respects, she definitely is finding an audience out there. The question is the audience audience big enough to get her over the hurdle on June 24th, and I'm not convinced of that.
Right. Yeah, it's she is representing quite well what would be called the left wing of the Democratic Party. And, you know, you go down the list of what she is against: no fracking in Western Maryland, no liquid natural gas exports in Southern Maryland.
Cove Point. Who's likely to vote in the primary, Barry? What's the base that's going to vote in the primary?
Well, we don't know. We really don't know.
We are in uncharted waters, aren't we?
Exactly.
This is the earliest primary ever, I think, right?
For governor, yes.
For governor. A June 24th primary. And also, I was thinking about this today. When was the last time we had three decent candidates for one of these offices in Maryland, when we had a contested primary?
Well, we've had contested primaries.
Well, sure, we've had more than one candidate. But when have we had one that was, you know, interesting?
Well, not this interesting.
But I have to go back a ways.
But you have somebody who is the clear leader in this campaign.
According to polls that we had, a little dated now.
But
we don't really know for sure, do we?
No, we do not. But if you look at the way the lieutenant governor has been running his campaign, it is indicative of somebody who is taking internal polls, which show he is well ahead.
Right. I would agree with Barry on that as well. And you have to remember, Democratic voters still really like Martin O'Malley. And the smartest strategy that Brown can really put out there is to hitch his wagon to Martin O'Malley. And I think that that's really what he's banking on.
And that's what he... He said last night, time and time again, we've had a lot of successes in the last 8 years, and I'm going to build on it.
Here's Joe in Baltimore adding his two cents to this discussion. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Dan, and your panel. Thank you for taking my call. I guess I've got a point and then a couple questions. My point is, I think Gensler won the debate pretty substantially in the sense that he was very honest. I mean, at least I thought he was honest, and I think the other, at least Brown, danced around a lot of the questions and didn't give direct answers. But I guess what my question is, and also I think it was interesting that Anthony Brown was more defensive and not as responsive. But I guess what my question is, it seems like to me that the election is going to be decided by four subdivisions: Montgomery and Baltimore County, PG and Baltimore City. I could see that Gensler would win Baltimore County, Montgomery County possibly, and then Brown would win Baltimore City and PG. And I was interested in your guests' thoughts on that. And then also, how Brown and both Missouri could both base their increase in revenue on basically sin taxes and smoking pot and gambling. I mean, I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, as far as how the election might go, this is all speculation, but the most populous jurisdiction is Montgomery County. And that's where Gensler is counting on a very large vote. Now, Missouri is also from that district, but she is from the southern part in Tacoma Park, which sometimes has been called the Soviet Republic of
People's
Tacoma
Republic
Park.
Of Tacoma,
yes.
Park.
It's very, very, very liberal.
Yeah.
But you know, Brown is from Prince George's County. Gensler's running mate is from Prince George's County. Missouri's running mate is from Prince George's County. So we're not sure how Prince George's is going to turn out. We do know in Montgomery County there's a very hot and contested county executive race. There is no contested race for any of the top offices in Prince George's County. In Baltimore City,
you expect a pretty good turnout, turnout maybe in Montgomery County.
Absolutely. Yeah. Baltimore City, there are very few, if none, as far as hot local races. So the turnout may not be large in the city, which may not be a good sign for Brown. Which does leave, to a large extent, Baltimore County as the next largest jurisdiction up for grabs. And Baltimore County traditionally has been much more conservative in its voting patterns. And Gensler has been counting on winning Baltimore County. I don't know if that's going to come to pass. The county executive out there, Kevin Kamenetz, has not endorsed yet. Mm. So,
I know that Gensler likes to call himself a Baltimore candidate, because his office is here as attorney general.
He
makes that point.
He at least has worked here for 8 years.
Right.
And he did go to Oriole games at Memorial Stadium.
What your thoughts on that, Melissa?
On voter turnout and where, who's going to essentially decide the
elections?
Well,
you can go to the second part of the question, too, about sin taxes, marijuana, for instance.
No, it is interesting. I think that of the three candidates, Gensler's been the most honest about saying, we don't have all these resources to fund all these programs. And Heather Mazier wants to enact universal pre-K on the back of legalizing marijuana. In fact, the second best point I thought Gansler had last night, in addition to the whole tax issue, was when he was talking about teenagers going to 7-Eleven and being able to buy a Diet Coke, some fast food, and some pot. And I think that resonates with a lot of parents out there who are nervous about Heather Mazier's approach to legalizing marijuana. And of course, the Brown campaign wants to extend gambling even further in the state to fund its pre-K program. So I do think that in the general election, if either Brown or Mazier were to be the nominee, this is going to be a huge issue and a losing one, I think, for the Democratic nominee.
Nathan Sterner of the WYPR news staff, our morning announcer here, wanted me to point out a couple of things from polling that took place over this past year with regard to legalization of marijuana. Washington Post poll, February 2014, plurality for legalization, 49% for, 43% against. That's legalization. Goucher poll on the same question, legalization. Majority for legalization. That's a November 2013 poll from the Goucher Center, 51% for. And then on the question of decriminalization, that's a different question. But as far as legalization goes, one more, the public policy polling released October 2013, conducted for the ACLU of Maryland and the Marijuana Policy Project, so they're the ones that asked for the poll. That showed a majority for legalization, 53%.
Yeah, well, polls are interesting, but the larger question, and the one that the state legislature has to grapple with, is this good for the citizens of Maryland? Is it good for society? And that's the issue that we haven't even touched, and the politicians haven't gone anywhere near it. Mm-hmm. Missouri does not talk about the health implications or the public safety implications. The state hasn't done those types of studies. And I think if you were to poll the state legislature, what you would find is a lot more reluctance to march forward on this until there's much more in-depth discussion.
And I think they're also waiting for what happens in Colorado and Washington to see the implications of
Gansler points
legalizing
that out.
It. Yeah.
I think Brown says something similar. Let's wait and see what happens there.
Right. And the New York Times had an article on Sunday on that very point saying 5 months into the experiment in Colorado, there are signs that there are significant health problems and public safety problems, but it's still too early to come to a decision as to whether it's good or bad.
We have to take another break here. Before I do, a couple of comments from listeners. One on email. Kevin says, based on the advertisements I've seen on television, the lieutenant governor is a total yawn. He doesn't inspire me at all, and his ads are all image, i.e. his military service, as if that is going to sway me. Gansler fires me up, actually, and has more accomplishments than Brown. And a comment about TV advertising on Facebook from Robin, who said that at the end of last night's debate, she thought it was odd that WBAL ran a Brown political ad directly after the forum. And I was struck by that, too. I thought if I was a station manager over there, I might buffer a little bit, throw in some aspirin ads before you get to the political ads again. I know they're making a lot of money this season.
Well, they sort of balanced that off because the Brown ad was cut short.
Was it?
And they went immediately to what? The state government Maryland lottery numbers.
Oh, is that right? I didn't notice that. Oh, that's right. That guy had that funny goatee. I did notice the announcer on the lottery announcements. Oh, we have to take a break here. 410-662-8780. We'll come right back and go to the phone lines. Just be a minute. Here's Peggy's email. Why is no one mentioning that Mazier was head and shoulders above the other candidates? There is an alternative. She is amazing! 2 exclamation points. Okay, Peggy, well, you mentioned it. I read it on the air. If someone wants to write in one for Anthony Brown and Doug Gansler, I'll read it the same way with 2 exclamation points. This is Brad from Baltimore, who works in Bowie. He says, I am voting for Heather Mazier. I get tired of reading about all of the very conservative governors making headlines in our country. I want states that are liberal to have strong liberal governors as a balance so that the country can see that those states will do well economically and that society won't collapse. Also, I work backstage at the Bowie Center for the Performing Arts where we had a gubernatorial debate. I don't know who was responsible, but your comments about Brown make me think he changed the format of the debate. Originally, all the candidates would be on stage together for the debate with questions and responses from all the candidates, but it changed just so one candidate was on the stage at a time. It wasn't a debate, really. Okay, I just want to add this before we move on and take calls from our listeners here. the statement last night about economic performance, comparing Maryland's economic performance of late with Virginia's. Doug Gansler saying that that Maryland had been falling behind its neighbor to the south. Anthony Brown, Lieutenant Governor, said the opposite is true. His quote in today's Sun, some people say Virginia's cleaning our clock. The last 12 months, Maryland created 25,000 jobs. Virginia lost 5,000 jobs. There's no according to on there, so I don't know what his source was. This is what we came up with. U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, between April 2013 and April 2014, Virginia's unemployment rate decreased from 5.6% to 4.9%, and more than 100,000 people were employed there within the same time frame. They showed a net gain of more than 100,000 over that year. Maryland showed a net gain of 10,000 over that same year. Also, so I don't know what this means. According to statistics from the state's website, Maryland's website, Maryland has created about 22,000 jobs within the last 12 months, and that includes 9,000 jobs in April. But anyway, if you go by the BLS, you got a much bigger net growth in jobs in Virginia than you do in Maryland. If I come up with information that counters that between today and tomorrow, I'll report that. But that's what we have.
Well, Gansler, coming from Montgomery County, is much more sensitive to the business threat from Northern Virginia. And he is much more in touch with business people, corporate people over there, who are constantly complaining about the high corporate tax in Maryland. It's like 30% higher than it is in Virginia. Over the decades, this issue has come up time and time again. And no governor has really addressed it and made economic development his or her top issue.
I would also say that this narrative, you're going to hear this a lot in the fall's campaign, because all of the Republican candidates for governor are talking about what an unfriendly business climate Maryland has. And so this is going to be a key issue, I think, differentiating whoever the Democratic nominee is going to be with the Republican nominee. And at least Gansler, I think, recognizes this. And I think that he's trying to steer more toward the center in this campaign. And I think he's maybe hoping that Democratic voters will consider electability in the fall as something that they will think about when they're casting their vote in June.
It's almost like the Republicans are all getting on the same page now, starting with the same theme, hitting the Democrats for an overtaxed state, spending too much in the state, and all coming from David Craig, Ron George, Larry Hogan, and Charles Lawler. By the way, their debate airs Friday at 7 p.m. on MPT and WBAL-TV, so make sure you watch that. Republicans, you have to make up your mind among those four candidates. So that debate was taped yesterday. It airs Friday again at 7 p.m. on WBAL and MPT. Mark in Bel Air, we'll go to you next. Thanks for calling Midday.
Yes, I'm what's defined as unaffiliated, and I think today I'm going to go and transfer and register as a Democrat and vote for Heather Mazur.
I see. I think today is the deadline, right? You have until today to switch your affiliation?
Yes.
Yeah. So what convinced you about that?
I have to look at how Anthony Brown has run his campaign. It is very much reminds me of how Kathleen Kennedy Townsend ran her campaign, where basically, you know, a good majority of the state Democratic Party said, this is going to be our anointed choice, and he's just running it into the ground.
What do you mean he's running us into the ground?
No, the way he's running his campaign.
Oh.
The missteps, the inability to clearly, you know, speak over what happened with the healthcare website.
Okay, so last night, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, until last night, really hadn't seen that. I don't recall in the first debate how much this came up. I know it did come up, the one that was that David Gregory moderated, that we didn't see that much of in the Baltimore area.
Right.
Barry,
right? Yeah, it was much more prevalent because the question was much more directed toward Brown.
Right. Last night,
yes.
By Jeff Salkin.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting what the caller said about the comparison to Kathleen Kennedy Townsend. I would just remind voters that Kathleen Kennedy Townsend was following a very unpopular governor at the time. Paris Glendening, if you recall, was leaving office with amid all kinds of scandals.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, O'Malley, by contrast, at least among Democrats in the state, is still pretty popular.
Let's go to George in Baltimore. You're up next. Welcome to the show, George.
Oh, Good. How are you doing?
Okay. How are you doing?
All right. My statement is that you're holding Brown to unrealistic expectations. Again, my case in point is the fact that you look at Microsoft. They put out software. 3 years later, they're still trying to get it to run right. You look at automotive manufacturers. The same thing. They're putting out cars. They're recalling the cars. You can look at Baltimore City. They had to get rid of the lottery board. Look at Baltimore City. They had to get rid of their speed cameras. All this is new technology. Why are you going to hold him at such a high standard when, at the same time, the other two candidates are not held to that standard? I mean, what are their experience?
Well, I don't know. Gansler has considerable experience and a pretty competent and accomplished attorney general, done all kinds of things. I don't know that he has a debacle on his hands. You can't say there's a debacle on his record. Heather Mazier is, what, her second term as a state delegate, so all you have to go by there is, you know, what her record is as a state delegate. But in the case of the lieutenant governor, he was assigned a particular role to in particular, the base realignment, military base realignment that happened in Maryland in the first term of Governor O'Malley, and then this thing. So I don't know what else we have to base it on. So, I mean, you can choose whether or not you're going to hold somebody to that standard or not because he's not a computer programmer. Anthony Brown, that's kind of not the point. We know he's not a computer programmer.
Well, there's lots of blame to go around on the debacle.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of the blame has to rest on the co-chairman of the coordinating council who just missed this completely. And that's Josh Sharfstein, the health secretary. And Anthony Brown still has his job. Yes, and Anthony Brown, who still has his job.
By the way, we just confirmed that today is the last day to switch affiliations for the primary. You can do it online or by visiting your local board of elections. You can do it online. Today's the last day. So if you want to get in on this, independent or unaffiliated voters are not allowed to vote in the primary, I say, unfortunately. Jerry in Baltimore, hi.
Hey, Dan, and thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I like the last caller. I think all of y'all are way too hard on Anthony Brown, okay? And I say that because we don't need a slick Willie for governor. I am a supporter of the Clintons, but look, I want somebody that's going to be thoughtful and do due diligence. And the debacle, as you call it, with the healthcare thing, you're right. He is not a programmer. He is not a CIO, Chief Information Officer. That is who should have been running it. And if you want to blame somebody, blame our own management that is behind the times on technology. When they went to school, everything was a mainframe. Okay. So,
what would have happened if this was in the military, though, Jerry? If this is something that had occurred in the Defense Department or in the Army, they would have blamed the CIO.
Hey, you know what I want to blame? I want to blame management because we had enough friendly fire accidents that killed enough of our guys because of them. And in what happened in the military? Oh, well. Point being, I do like Heather Mazier. I like a lot of what she is saying. And, you know, I'm just saying be fair to Brown. Heather Mazier is definitely a potent candidate because we have gone too far center right. Maryland, in my account, is a center left, and we need to go back more left.
Okay, just tell me this.
Because we
how are we not being fair to Brown? By asking the question about what his role was in the health insurance exchange to get a specific answer there and not being satisfied with the answer and characterizing his answer as it deserved to be today. I don't think it was. Did you think that was a good answer?
What I think, sir, is you're harping on it too much.
Oh, okay.
There is more to running the state than just a health care exchange, which, by the way, has gotten fixed. Just like our roads and bridges, they get fixed.
Okay, well, thank you. Actually, it's not fixed. They dumped it, and we're moving on to another exchange, right?
And we're not sure how that's going to work either. That's a huge unanswered question, how the switch to the Connecticut system is going to be handled. This could be another foul-up. We just don't know.
How do you make a decision, Melissa? You go by someone's record? You go by how they come across, I guess, on television, how they come across in the candidates' forum.
You know, voters bring in all kinds of factors when they're trying to make a decision. I do think, to be fair to Jerry and to some of the other callers who are Brown supporters, there are still a lot of compelling reasons voters may want to choose Anthony Brown. I think the O'Malley administration can point to some real successes in the last 8 years. A lot of countries and rather a lot of states around the country, in response to the Great Recession that they endured, cut drastically higher education spending, for example, and spending on and in local education. And the O'Malley administration decided not to do that. And I think
held the line on tuition increases.
Yeah. So I think that there are lots of good things that you could point to the O'Malley administration.
If you look at the three candidates last night, you got a clear picture of your choices in the Democratic primary. Someone who is supportive of the status quo and what's been done in the last 8 years and wants to continue along that path. Another candidate who wants a change, but wants a gradual change. And the third one who wants a very dramatic and almost radical change in how things are done in Annapolis. And, you know, that's what came across most clearly to me last night.
A comment on Facebook from Kevin, who says, "I am totally uninspired by Brown. I wouldn't hold his feet to the fire for the rollout of the website. It was a huge endeavor that was bound to be fraught with problems. And I heard an interview with the governor of Massachusetts who said it took them 2 years before they got their website working properly. Apparently, there's a lot more to rolling out these types of websites." Let's take one more call here. It's William on the Eastern Shore. Oh, no. I'm sorry. We have time for two.
Hello.
Hopefully we have time for both of you. Go ahead, William, and then we'll try to get to Victor.
Real quickly. Thank you. You guys are doing a great job for one thing. I like the reference to the measures of number of words that a young child knows before a certain age made by Doug Gaines. That tells me that rollout, the pre-K rollout, is going to have some performance measures. And particularly, I like the fact that he said that, you know what, Baltimore and other inner urban areas that have these kind of problems share a lot of problems with rural Maryland. Well, let's bring Maryland together. I've heard for too many years living over here how we pay too much attention in the city of Baltimore and not enough attention in the rural area. Well, we actually share a lot of the same problems, and it doesn't make much sense to be sending these future students of Bethesda Chevy Chase High School, you know, lots of money when they already got it.
So who are you talking about, and who are you going to vote for, William?
Well, I'm leaning towards Doug Gansler now because that tells me, you know, you talk about policy wants and policy analysis. Part of policy analysis is how are you going to measure what you decided to do?
Okay.
I was told right off the bat.
William, sorry.
The governor is going to show us a way how he's going to measure what he wants to do.
Okay.
I do like Heather. I think she's a bit left for us. I think if we want a Republican governor, Heather might be the candidate the Democrats should put forward.
Oh, I see. William, thank you for your comments. I'm sorry we're running out of time here. And Victor, I owe you a call. So Victor from Elkridge, call back another day when we have open phone lines. I'll put you right on, okay? Say, this is Victor from Elkridge. You couldn't get to me on June 3rd. Dan Roderick's here. That's our first hour of Midday. I want to thank Melissa Deckman of Washington College and Barry Raskovar of PoliticalMaryland.com for being with us again to analyze the debate and talk some politics here with our listeners. Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Pleasure.
And stay tuned, folks. We've got another hour of Midday coming up. We're going to take a break now for lunch, brought to us on Tuesdays by Bagby Pizza, located in the historic Bagby Building over there in Harbor East. Thanks for lunch, fellas. We'll see you again after the news for the second hour of our show.